Dominic John Gould, thanks very much for finding time to briefly outline for Theatre Voice listeners roughly what's ahead. Big plans for the Globe in the coming 3-4 years in terms of development. Could you just start with the Olympics, because that's going to be a very eye-catching festival, a complete works festival with a twist.
Yeah, it's complete works, but it's playing on the strength of our building, and the strength of our building is the building itself and our ability to host other people, because audiences all over the world want to be in the building and artists want to play in the building. There's a desperate hunger from all sorts of directors and all sorts of actors all over the world to come here and play around, because for them it's tapping into a source of something very important. And they're probably slightly more enthusiastic often than people in the UK are in that regard. So anyway, the idea is very simple, which is to do the complete works, but to do each play in a different language, presented by a different company from abroad. And I don't think anyone's ever attempted something like that before. When the RSC did their very splendid Complete Works Festival, I think they had 5 or 6 shows in a different language. And we just want to make this about language more than anything else. It's not about directors, it's not about actors, it's not about stunning visions or anything like that. It's about the languages. It's about communities of artists taking pride in telling those stories in their own language, and communities of audiences really enjoying the fact that they can take over this space and enjoy an afternoon or an evening with a story told in their own language and by someone from their own culture. And I don't know what the result would be. It would just shake things up a bit, I think.
Mm. I mean, does that grow out, I suppose, of the Globe's rather unique position as a sort of purveyor of high-quality Shakespeare, but often to significant patches of audience who are visiting London maybe for the first time, or certainly coming to see Shakespeare here in London, and therefore the mother tongue, our mother tongue as it were, is for them a foreign language. So you're already noticing, as it were, this kind of hunger for Shakespeare in audiences that may not be fully understood or understood at all, but somehow attracts an audience in its own right. I suppose you've noticed that possibly here.
I don't think that's anything new, and I think that I think there's anything new about Shakespeare being presented to audiences from overseas, or people from overseas being excited by the telling of the stories of Shakespeare. We get sort of tarred with this ghastly Little Englander brush of, oh, you're full of tourists all the time, which really reveals the most sort of poisonous and toxic side of English nature, and anti sort of cosmopolitan and anti internationalist side of the English character. 400 years ago, when the Globe was built, the only evidence we have for our contemporary Globe is, the strongest evidence is from an after-dinner drawing and a diary entry. And the after-dinner drawing is by a Dutchman, and the diary entry is by a Swiss. So all our evidence, our strongest evidence of what the Globe looked like, comes from Europeans. At the time, 400 years ago, London was full of people from overseas. It was full of Dutch, it was full of French, it was full of Germans, people who were trading, people over here as apprentices, people over here for a variety of reasons. Shakespeare himself boarded with an Italian family, French family, don't get me wrong. I've just read a fantastic, brilliantly revealing PhD by a German student about what she calls the comedians of England, who were actors who were touring or basically settled semi-permanently in Germany in the late 16th and early 17th century, and who were presenting their plays, the plays of Shakespeare and others, in English. So they were going round the lowlands, around Poland, around Germany, around Denmark, presenting plays in English. And in some ways, they founded the German theatre. The German theatre was founded by English touring companies speaking in English. Two members of Shakespeare's company that were commemorated in the Folio spent an enormous amount of time in Europe. Two other members had very strong connections with European theatre. Sorry, I'm going on a bit, but it says my reaction to that sort of you're full of tourists thing is that, you know, the story of Shakespeare and the story of the Globe has always been an incredibly internationalist one, very, very much locked into different cultures and to different languages. And how we've got this sort of ghastly Little England at them, and we think that that's been pertained through the ages, and it hasn't at all.
You alluded there to the kind of sketches, the remnants, as it were, of the Globe being kind of reconstituted through sort of drawings. Perhaps that leads on to the the second big project, which is formulating, reconstructing the Jacobean theatre here. What can you just talk us through that?
Yeah, in the same way as the Globe is based on scraps of evidence here or there, a sketch, diary entry, some reportage, and overwhelmingly the plays themselves, which are full of references to the structure that surrounds them and to the architecture that surrounds them. We've gathered together scraps of evidence to help us build our indoor theatre, which is the other project that we're initiating at the moment. The shell for that indoor theatre exists, has existed for 15 years, and we're now ready to fill it with the oak timber frame construction, which will inhabit it. It's fundamentally based on drawings that were found in the late 1960s in Worcester College in Oxford, and they were originally thought to be by Inigo Jones from 1616, and they were thought to be designs for the Cockpit Theatre. Subsequent research has shown that they probably weren't by Inigo Jones, they were by Inigo Jones' assistant, a man called Webb, and that they were probably later. We don't exactly know when, but later than 1616. But what's overwhelmingly true is that they are the oldest designs of an English playhouse in existence, and they are by far our best pointer to what an indoor Jacobean playhouse looked like. It's got a pit with stalls in it. It's got two galleries, U-shaped, going around an auditorium surrounding a platform stage, boxes on either side of the stage, boxes behind the stage, creating a very intense, very intimate, very cocooned, almost claustrophobic auditorium with packing a lot of people in, much closer to the Donmar or the Almeida than the Globe itself. And I mean, we've had images of it, you can see images of it from late 17th century theatres in Europe, particularly in Austria and in Germany, and you get that sense of an enormous amount of people packed into a very tight space. Probably the closest resemblance of it in England that you get is the Georgian Theatre in Richmond in North Yorkshire, where you get a tremendous amount of people packed into a tight space, creating a very powerful and very human effect. So that's the next big project.
And the research that's sort of underpinning that is still, am I right in thinking it's still partly ongoing, that the references that are being picked up in particular plays are helping assist the construction?
Yes. No, I mean, we've got the basic model, which is based on those drawings, but we also know a lot more about the Blackfriars now than we did 20 years ago when they started building the shell, they started creating the shell. And a lot of that knowledge about the Blackfriars can inform this. So we're not working exactly to those Worcester College drawings, we're working from them. And we're using information from subsequent research, from theatre contracts, from evidence from the plays themselves, from reportage about going to the theatre and what it was like, in making sure that we get it as right as we can. It won't be the Blackfriars, it would be foolish to say it would be exactly the Blackfriars, but the Globe that we have isn't exactly the Globe. But hopefully it'll be, I mean, it's unique in that no one else in the world has recreated a theatre this, an Elizabethan, a Jacobean indoor theatre this closely, apart from possibly a replica Blackfriars in Stanton in Virginia in America. But it'll be unique in London, and it'll be by far our best guess at what those indoor theatres were like. And it'll be an enormously important part of the theatre story, because this was the first moment when theatres in England went indoors, and this is the beginning of the movement that became the great proscenium arch.
And there are particular plays that Shakespeare wrote for the indoor space, so in effect we'll be seeing those plays really for the first time inhabiting the space that they were conceived for.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he wrote at the end of his career, when the company moved back into the Blackfriars in 1609, he wrote a series of plays, Pericles, Cymbeline, Winter's Tale, Tempest, which were there as much as anything to use that space and the particular apparatus and equipment that space allowed you to use. It was a certain sort of lighting, certain sort of use of music, probably a limited amount of armies charging around, a lot more about domestic relationships. I mean, it's hard to read how Pericles was written for that. I mean, Pericles was probably also written for the Globe as well, because that's such a sort of great swinging epic, but it'll pull the massive things out of those plays, I think. But also it'd be great to re-examine some of the earlier plays and see how they play in that sort of space and within those sort of within those terms. And also it'll enable us to look at the wider repertoire that we've slightly neglected. We've never done we haven't done a Middleton here for ages. We've never done a Johnson here. We haven't done as much Beaumont or Fletcher as we'd like to do. We'd like to do Marston, we'd like to do Haywood, we'd like to do Ford. There's a great big, you know, swathes of stuff that we haven't got to, which will be a revelation to see in that sort of space.
With the RSC poised at some point to come back to London in a more sort of durational way, and Michael Boyd's thinking vis-a-vis the spaces at Stratford and London moving more to courtyard-shaped theatre, is there going to be a kind of point of either connection, convergence, even overlap, do you think, between what's going to happen here with the indoor space and what might happen with the RSC? Is that factored into the way you approach the project here? What is it where the other Shakespeare, great Shakespeare company will be doing?
No, not remotely. I mean, the RSC have been steadily copying what the Globe does for the last 10 or 15 years and then claiming that it's something brand new they've just thought up. You know, they've been doing plays in open light, and you know, 10 years after the Globe started doing plays in open light and saying it's an experiment they're doing, they're now moving towards a thrust stage and towards having, you know, people all around them and people much closer, which is, and they spent a lot of time in the Globe looking at the Globe and working out, you know, why the Globe was so exciting to people as they were doing their designs for the courtyard, and they've changed in that direction. We're not doing the indoor theatre as a way of converging with the RSC at all. We're doing it because we want to do it and because we think it's the necessary and most interesting part of continuing our story and reflecting Shakespeare's company, which did plays outdoors in the summers and indoors in the winters. I mean, I think if the RSC come to London more permanently, it would be terrific. I mean, I think the more quality companies that there are in London doing Shakespeare throughout the year, the better, because it will, you know, it feeds and stimulates and provokes an appetite for more. So it's great that the RSC are here at the moment doing stuff at the Roundhouse, and it would be great if they were here more often.
Mm. And do you see work kind of in rep between the Globe and this new theatre, or do you think they will have very distinct kind of repertoires, I suppose?
I think they have very distinct repertoires. I think what you've got to be really careful of is that you see up and down the country big theatres nobbled by small theatres. You see up and down the country theatres which were opened on their own as great big public arena thrust epic spaces, and then 10 years, 15 years, 20 years later, small theatres open up beside them, and they draw away a lot of the excitement, and artists want to work in them and audiences want to be in them, and they suddenly become the powerhouses of those spaces. I mean, you see it slightly happen with the Swan in Stratford, you can see it happen with the Minerva in Chichester, you can see it happening in a variety of places. I think you've got to be very careful about running a small space alongside a big space, because you can quite easily take the big space out of the legs. So the intention here is very, very clearly that the Globe itself will be the summer space, the indoor theatre will be the winter space, and they'll never run along at the same time.
And you've outlined at the launch this week that you have roughly, is it 2 million already banked for this?
Three,
and you need to raise
about another five.
Yeah. So does that mean that, I mean, is there an actual completion date yet? Is that too soon to say?
Well, the intention is, I mean, you know, there's a momentum to these things. We know that we need one more big, walking, great, sizable gift to make it happen, and then, you know, we can probably go out to the public and collect a lot of small gifts together. But our intention is very firmly that we start the process of dismantling what's in there at the moment and then starting the build at the end of 2012, and build for a year and be ready to open and play for a season the winter of 2013-2014. So that's when it'll open.
That's tremendously exciting. In the meantime, if you could just give a potted overview of the forthcoming season, what's the vision for that? Seems is that we've had the word of God, I suppose, is a very eye-catching moment.
I can't give you any details at the moment because we're not releasing director or casting details for a couple of weeks yet, because we've still got some things to sort out. It's the word of God. I mean, it's very simple. It's a celebration of it's tying into the 400-year anniversary of the King James Bible. And so we're opening with the Bible, with the King James Bible being read out by 20 actors over 74 hours, from Palm Sunday through to Easter Monday. And then we're playing in rep with the Bible, as it were, Hamlet, which will be the first show to come out of the traps, a small-scale tour. But I think it was a great, attractive idea just to open a season with the Bible and Hamlet, because they are the two foundation stones of modern English. And we know that the clerics sneaked into the playhouse, and we know that the playwrights hung out in the churches, and so that there was a correspondence between the language that the clerics were using and the language the playwrights were using, and it's an attempt to try and celebrate that. And then we go on to look at language and language addressing the relationship between the divine and the human in a number of different plays. Dr. Faustus, which we've never done here, has a very direct correlation to that. The mystery plays, which we're going to do in a special sort of form created for this place, for the Globe, have this wonderful sort of irreverent, rude relationship between the human and the divine, which really characterises a lot of the English drama that comes after it. We're doing the Howard Brenton's play again, Anne Boleyn, which was very much about the creation of the King James Bible, and a collection of other things.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.